All right, let's take our Bibles, turn to 2 Kings chapter number 6. 2 Kings chapter number 6. And we're going to be dealing with verses 8 through 20 tonight, but rather than read those ahead of time, I just want to read it as we go along. Save a little time for that. And what we find here in 2 Kings 6, verse number 8, we find a war going on between Syria and Israel. And in verse 8, we see the king of Syria counseled and planned with his servants about this war, which is normally what a king would do. Look at verse 8. Then the king of Syria warred against Israel and took counsel with his servants, saying, "In such and such a place shall be my camp." And so they were making war plans about where they would make their encampments. And no doubt they had some good war plans, as war plans go. But all the plans in the world, combined with all the armament in the world, are not enough to overcome the counsel of the Lord. And we see that the king of Israel had the counsel of the Lord through Elisha. Look at Elisha was privy to the king of Syria's plans and shared that plan with the king of Israel. Look at verse number 9. It says, "And the man of God sent unto the king of Israel, saying, Beware that thou pass not such a place, for thither the Syrians are come down." So he lets the king of Israel know the plan. Now, how did that happen? Did Elisha have a mole? Was there a traitor planted in the Syrian army? No, he just knew the Lord. And the Lord let him know the plans. He had something better than a mole. He had the Lord revealing to him what Syria was going to do. The absolute best counsel is that which comes from the Lord. And so the king of Israel, even though he wasn't looking for the Lord's counsel, through Elisha's word to him, he had good counsel, didn't he? And he abode by that. Amos 3, and verse number 7 says, "Surely the Lord will do nothing, but he revealeth his secrets unto his servants the prophets." So, and this is what we have here, you know, the Lord revealed to Elisha. And understand that Jehoram, he's also called Joram in the scripture, he's the wicked son of Ahab, who is still king of Israel here at this time. You know, we've kind of gotten away from that scenario, who was king and what was going on with the kingship. But it's Jehoram or Joram. And we wonder, why was the Lord helping wicked Joram and Israel? And I believe it was for the same reason that the Lord helped Ahab. Remember when we were studying Ahab and the Lord was wanting to show his glory to Ahab. And he used the prophet Elijah to do that. But we know Ahab didn't respond to that at all. But I believe the Lord's glory was being revealed here unto Joram and Israel. And even though Joram refused to acknowledge the Lord took care of his people here. Now we see in verse number 10, we see the king of Israel profited from the information Elisha shared. Look at verse 10. "And the king of Israel sent to the place which the man of God told him and warned him of, and saved himself there not once nor twice." And so at least three times. Huh? Not once or twice. That means we had to be saved there at least three times. From knowing what was happening and where they were encamping. And, you know, it makes for better war when you have some inside information. We have great communication in our armed forces trying to find out what the enemy is making plans about. And they're listening in and trying to decode stuff and trying to find out all the nitty-gritty details. The more they can find out, the better. And the better the source, the better the information. Well, you can't get a better source than the Lord himself. I mean, he knows exactly what's going on. And listen, you know, we would do better in the spiritual war that we find ourselves in, and we are in a spiritual war. I make no mistake about it. We'd do better in the spiritual war if we would listen to God's inside information that He's given to us in His Word. Hold your place there a minute and look at Ephesians chapter number 6 with me. Ephesians chapter number 6. And you're familiar with this, but just as a reminder, and it's good to read these things from time to time, but we are in a spiritual war, and the Lord does give us some instructions for our day. Ephesians 6, verse number 10, finally, my brethren, be strong in the Lord and in the power of His might. In other words, it's not through your strength that you're going to prevail. It's not through, you know, the strength of your friends and the folks that you are allied with. It's through the power of God. Look at verse 11. Put on the whole armor of God that you may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. For we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places. Wherefore, take unto you the whole armor of God, that ye may be able to withstand in the evil day, and having done all, to stand. And of course, we know that it gives the pieces of the armament there, and tells us to put that armament on, put the armor, whole armor of God, and we would be a lot better off in our spiritual warfare. Now, back to our text over in 2 Kings 6, in verse number 11, we see the heart of the king of Syria was sore troubled about this because he thought he had a mole in his midst. I mean, who wouldn't, right? Look at verse number 11. Therefore, the heart of the king of Syria was sore troubled for this thing, and he called his servants and said unto them, will ye not show me which of us is for the king of Israel? He was kind of wanting, you know, y'all be on the lookout. Tell me who's letting the enemy know. You know, I guess there was going to be a reward for whoever turned in their fellow soldier that was giving out the information. But we notice you think having a traitor in your midst that's sharing all of your plans with the enemy, that would have been very troubling indeed, right? I mean, it just would have. Now let's look at verse number 12, when we see the servants of the king of Syria told him that Elisha was the one sharing his secret plans with the king of Israel. Look at verse 12. One of his servants said, none, my lord, O king, but Elisha, the prophet that is in Israel, telleth the king of Israel the words that thou speakest in thy bedchamber. Now, you think you're talking in private? He's got a direct line to heaven. And he's listening in. And so we see they knew that they were not the ones that were telling on the plans. But think with me, Elisha's fame had no doubt spread far and wide after the healing of Naaman, who was the captain of the host of Syria. And how did they know? I think Naaman was convinced that Elisha had the Lord's ear, and he'd kind of spread that among his troops up under him. I think that's the only way that they would know. Naaman was being a witness, wasn't he? He was, even though he was still with the Syrians and still captain of the army there. And we see in verse number 13, we see the king of Syria sent out spies to figure out where Elisha was for the purpose of fetching him. Look at verse 13. And he said, go and spy where he is, talking about Elisha, that I may send and fetch him. And it was told him, saying, behold, he is in Dothan. Now, I do believe that this king had some sinister plans. I don't think he just wanted to speak to Elisha. He probably had plans on doing him in. But he wanted to get him captured, and probably no doubt he wanted to make an example out of him. But we're not told. But the spies figured out that Elisha was in Dothan, which was a town about 12 miles due north of Samaria. Now think about that, 12 miles due north of Samaria. It's going to come, that's going to be important here in just a minute.
All right.
Verse 14. Once he located where Elisha was, we see that he said in verse number 14, he sent a large number of his army secretly by night and surrounded the city with horses, chariots, and soldiers. Look for verse 14. Therefore sent he thither horses and chariots and a great host, and they came by night and compassed the city about. I don't know how big Dothan was. It wasn't as big as Samaria, but they got it surrounded. They got enough troops out there to surround it, and with Elisha knowing all of his plans, did he really think that the Lord wouldn't reveal this plan to Elisha? You know, he wasn't really thinking straight, was he? Now we see Elisha's servant got up early and stepped outside and saw that they were surrounded. Look at verse 15. And when this is not Gehazi. Okay, this is later. Gehazi's been replaced. Gehazi's off the scene. We saw that. He's got leprosy. He's gone. But here we got it. He's got a new servant. No doubt one of the sons of the prophets. Let's read verse 15. And when the servant of the man of God was risen early and gone forth, behold, an host compassed the city both with horses and chariots. Now, he said, look at what he said here. And his servant said unto him, "Alas, my master, how shall we do?" And that's the name of the message, "How shall we do?" But we see he was terrified. You can imagine. He's probably shaking in his sandals. just put yourself in his sandals. And he and Elisha were completely surrounded by the Syrian army, with no apparent way out, and it appeared to the servant to be a hopeless situation. The servant ran to Elisha and said, "Alas, my master, how shall we do?" In other words, he was saying, "What are we going to do? What are we going to do?" All he could see was the Syrian army. His heart and his mind were filled with negative thoughts because of what he saw and the circumstances they faced. All he saw was the circumstances. Okay? And when he saw the circumstances, "What are we going to do?" was his question. Or "How shall we do?" Verse number 16. We see Elisha make a statement that probably puzzled this servant. Verse 16. And he answered, "Fear not, for they that be with us are more than they that be with them." Now, obviously, he was in a state of fear, right? Like I said, he's probably shaking in his sandals. That's why he said, "Fear not, for they that be with us are more than they that be with them." And I'm sure the servant did a double take around. "What do you mean? It's just me and you." The servant was looking, though, with only his physical eyes. What the servant did not see was what the prophet of God could see through his spiritual eyes. The Lord had already shown Elisha what was going on. Elisha saw God's glorious provision that was already standing in place. And we see Elisha prayed. Look at verse number 17. The first part of verse 17, and Elisha prayed and said, "Lord, I pray thee, open his eyes that he may see." So Elisha prayed for the Lord to open the eyes of his servant that he might see what Elisha saw. And it took the Lord opening the eyes of Elisha's servant for him to see what was already there. Elisha couldn't get him to see it. It took God. You know, a lot of times, ain't nobody going to get you to see things except the Lord. You know? And there's no such thing, though, as a hopeless situation when you have the Lord. Because with the Lord in your life, there's always hope in there. There always is. I think of the Hebrew children being thrown in the fiery furnace. I mean, it looked like a hopeless situation, didn't it? okay, boys, you know, we took our stand. It's been nice knowing you. And that when they got thrown in, the Lord was in there with them, and they were delivered. Didn't even have a smell of smoke on them when they got out. That's amazing, isn't it? We serve an amazing God. You think of Daniel and the lions. You know, Daniel got chunked down in that hole, and those lions got lockjaw. Yeah. And how did that happen? Well, it may have looked hopeless. The king sure thought it was hopeless. He was afraid he was going to come back and find his friend. He was friends with Daniel. Afraid he was going to find him all chewed up and gone. But he found him very much alive. So when you got the Lord in your life, there's always hope. There are provisions of God that some folks just can't see or don't see that are available for every desperate situation of life. Understand that God is still at work today, and we need our eyes open to the glorious and mighty workings of God in us and around us. Now, when our eyes are open to God's glorious provision, it'll drive away our fear and it'll strengthen our faith. You know, when God begins to work and you can see His hand working, don't that give you an encouragement? There's a lot more to life than what we see with our physical eyes. Understand that. Things are not always what they seem to be. We can look at things with our physical eyes and let circumstances of life get us down and discouraged. And we can even get desperate sometimes. And I think this servant of Elisha was probably desperate. It's where he was at. And we end up thinking that there is no hope, and we fearfully ask, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? What we really need is to have our spiritual vision renewed and see things through the eyes of God. That is, we need to see things from God's perspective rather than from our perspective. And when we don't have a spiritual vision, or when we lose our spiritual vision of the things of God, you know, understand our outlook can look dim. It just really can. However, when we allow God to open our eyes, we begin to see things from His perspective, and we can realize that we're far better off than we could dream. Now, we see in the latter part of verse 17. Let's go ahead and read the first part too with it. But we see that the Lord had revealed to Elisha something, and then the Lord revealed that same thing to His servant here. Verse 17, and Elisha prayed and said, Lord, I pray Thee, open his eyes that he may see. And the Lord opened the eyes of the young man, and he saw. And get a look at this here. And behold, the mountain was full of horses and chariots of fire round about Elisha. You think that was an encouraging sight? Might have been scary to begin with, huh? what he was looking at there, the Lord had his hedge of protection around Elisha. I'm going to give you several verses here. We're not going to turn to them, but you ought to write them down, talking about the hedge that the Lord has around His people. Psalm 34 and verse number 7. And I'll quote it to you, Psalm 34:7. The angel of the Lord encampeth round about them that fear Him and delivereth them. That's encouragement, isn't it? That's an encouragement from the Lord. We know the story of Job. Job was hedged in by God before the Lord lifted it for His own purposes. Even Satan realized that the Lord had Job hedged in. And Job 1 verse 9 through 11 said, Then Satan answered the Lord and said, Doth Job fear God for naught? Hast not thou made an hedge about him and about his house and about all that he hath on every side? See, God had His protection right around Job. Satan couldn't touch him until the Lord allowed it to happen. And the Lord allowed it to happen for His honor and His glory. And Satan still could only go so far. Couldn't take his life. And so, you know, Satan there accused the Lord of taking and playing favorites, and that Job was just a paid lover is what he was. You know, he wouldn't love God if he took all that away from him. He says "Thou hast blessed the work of his hands, and his substance is increased in the land. But put forth thine hand now and touch all that he hath, and he will curse thee to thy face." Did that happen? Nope. Job never did curse God, did he? He didn't. So Satan didn't know what he's talking about. God was glorified that Job did not do that. Abraham knew of the Lord's hedge in his life. In Genesis 15, verse number 1, the Lord said to him, "Fear not, Abram, I am thy shield and thy exceeding great reward." A shield. That's a hedge of protection, isn't it? Israel knew Lord's hedge as they fled from Pharaoh in Exodus 14, verse 19 and 20. Remember the pillar of cloud by day and the pillar of fire by night? Yeah. The Egyptians couldn't get near them. Couldn't touch them. They wanted to, but they couldn't. David knew the Lord's protection and his hedge as he faced Goliath, as he faced Saul, as he faced Absalom, and as he faced even other enemies. And he recorded these words in Psalm 3:3, "But thou, O Lord, art a shield for me, my glory and the lifter up of mine head." And then in Psalm 5, verse 11 and 12, he said, "Blessed, but let all those that put their trust in thee rejoice. Let them ever shout for joy, because thou defendest them. Let them also that love thy name be joyful in thee, for thou, Lord, wilt bless the righteous, wilt favor, with favor that wilt thou compass him as with a shield." With favor wilt thou compass him as with a shield. And here we see it again in our passage tonight. A hedge of protection. Don't you know that that had to be an awesome sight? I'm talking about a mountain full of horses and chariots of fire round about them. Now, what Elisha had said in verse 16 was true. And see what he said, "Fear not, for they that be with us are more than that be with them." But he saw that by faith. He saw that by the Lord having his eyes opened. So we see in verse 18, we see how they did. Look at verse 18. "When they came down to him, Elisha prayed unto the Lord and said, Smite this people, I pray thee, with blindness. And he smote them with blindness according to the word of Elisha." Now, it's interesting here that Elisha doesn't ask the Lord to bring the chariots and the horses down and kill them. Strike them blind. And Elisha prayed for the Lord to strike this contingent from the Syrian king blind, and the Lord did. Now look at verses 19 and 20. As we see, Elisha led them on, remember me telling you that there's 12 miles between Dothan and Samaria? Well, they're fixing to get led, blinded, but they're going to be led on a 12-mile journey to Samaria. That's right. Elisha was in Dothan, and he led these soldiers to Samaria. Look at verse 19 and 20. "Elisha said unto them, This is not the way, neither is this the city. Follow me, and I will bring you to the man whom ye seek." But he led them to Samaria. And it came to pass, when they were come into Samaria, that Elisha said, "Lord, open the eyes of these men, that they may see." And the Lord opened their eyes, and they saw, and behold, they were in the midst of Samaria. Now who's shaking in their sandals? It's the Syrian army, right? And look at verses 21 through 23, and we see the final result of this venture. Verse 21, and the king of Israel said unto Elisha, now this is the king, Joram, and he said, the king of Israel said unto Elisha when he saw them, my father, shall I smite them? Shall I smite them? He wanted to kill them. And he answered, thou shalt not smite them. Wouldst thou smite those whom thou hast taken captive with a sword and with thy bow? Set bread and water before them that they may eat and drink and go to their masters. You know, talking about prisoners of war. If you're taking prisoners of war, you don't just take them and shoot them. You know? And he told him to feed them. And look at verse 23. And he prepared great provision for them. When they had eaten and drunk, he sent them away. And they went to their master. So the bands of Syria came no more into the land of Samaria. Now, listen, in much the same way that Elisha prayed to the Lord for his servant's eyes to be open, we need to pray that the Lord would have our eyes open. Amen. That he would help us to keep our eyes open, spiritual eyes open. Not just looking at our circumstances and letting our hearts be filled with fear, but understanding the resources that we have in the Lord, the Lord's provision for us. Amen. All right, we'll leave off there tonight. That's our Bible study for this evening. And we'll pick up in verse number 24 next week, Lord willing. And we'll see a great famine take place in Samaria and what happens with that. All right. Let's pull out our prayer list. We'll pray for the needs on the list, and we'll be dismissed with this prayer.